There are 9 or 10 of these key technologies, starting with the internet, that are really driving the world we're in and where we're going.
So every time the source of data shifts, it spawns massive industries.
From Orion X in association with Inside HPC, this is the At HPC podcast. Join Shaheen Khan and Doug Black as they discuss supercomputing technologies and the applications, markets, and policies that shape them. Thank you for being with us.
Hi, Shaheen. Good to be with you again. So there was an article in the Wall Street Journal on the front page of the online edition, at least, about an emerging phenomenon called Internet 3.0. And it kind of got me thinking about a conversation. Actually, we've had this conversation a few times in the 3 or 4 years I've known you about a framework for understanding the world we're in technologically and where we're going. And as I understand it, Shaheen, there are 9 or 10 of these key technologies, starting with the internet, that are really driving the world we're in and where we're going.
I do remember that conversation. We've been thinking about this for probably a better part of a decade because all these different technology trends, there were just too many of them. And at some point, the question was, you know, why are there so many of them? And in what way is an organization, I mean, my joke was that there aren't enough CTOs in a regular, ordinary organization to put your arms around all of this. Now, bigger companies, of course, have the wherewithal to track all of these, but even they don't track it in one decision body. The expertise is scattered around the company.
Interesting.
So that led us to step back and say, okay, what are we really observing?
Right. So if I could tick off the list, and then maybe you could fill in the key function that they provide. And I really like this framework. It rationalizes the world and it allows us to kind of categorize, organize, slot, and compare and understand. So the list is, obviously, the internet is the platform that we live on. IoT, AI, blockchain, crypto, 5G, HPC, and then accelerators in several different forms, and then cyber.
And if you add biotechnology, you get a complete 10, if I'm counting right.
Right.
Bio comes in because we're all biological beings, and that's a big piece of it. So yeah, we can, in fact, it was in a conversation with you a few years ago where we came up with this narrative that I'm about to share.
Yeah.
IoT, Internet of Things, is the fountain of data. You need to make sense of that data. So you use AI to make sense of it. You increasingly need physics-based simulations to enhance it or to understand it. And that leads to HPC. Blockchain is how you transact it. Cryptocurrencies is how you pay for it. That is better, faster, cheaper than traditional methods. And quantum computing is an example of how you accelerate some things, but as GPUs and other forms of accelerators that we've talked about. All of this is communicated via 5G as an example of how that communication interconnect works. The whole thing is internet, and then cyber risk includes security, privacy, compliance, also weaponized information, which is an issue right now in the world. So that gave you the whole perspective, and I think we can use that for understanding what strategy to take, what technology to look at, what future to aim for, what policies to pursue, things like that.
Yeah, and you're mentioning biotech. That's kind of the middle ground, isn't it? Where we have, in effect, I guess an analogy would be the analog world moving into digital because we're digitizing everything. Everything is data. There's a number attached to everything.
In fact, the 2x2, so to say, because that's what analysts do, is analog to digital and classical to quantum.
Yeah.
And what we are shooting for, what we are aiming, is a blend of physical and digital, where physical includes biological and mechanical, and multiple physical things can be assembled into a logical thing, and a digital thing can be combined or split up into virtual things, and fundamentally trying to come up with a digital twin, as they say, of physical things. And as time goes by, you would do more and more sophisticated implementation of it.
It's so interesting in looking through that list. Some of these things have been around for quite a while, and some are really quite new. The internet's been around for 25 years. Now, all technology is always in its stage of infancy or in an early stage. That's how I look at it.
Very true.
Some are more early stage than others, right?
I think that's why people are compelled to search for Internet 2.0 or Web 2.0 or Web 3 and try to increment these things to try to capture the qualitative difference that's happening. Like Internet initially was just informational, then it became transactional, and now it's becoming more semantic and more value in the Internet. So those complexities, you want to capture them in a way that represents the qualitative difference.
Yeah. And of course, when we're talking about an internet currency, crypto, Bitcoin, then it's really getting serious when it's monetized.
You could really argue that digital money was going to happen one way or another. And that's different than digitized money, because the existing so-called fiat currency is already quite digital. But then there are also issues with it because there's so much demand on fiat currency to be a unit of account and to be for day-to-day transaction and to be for savings and to be for this, that, and the other, and also to be for like microtransactions. And as I like to joke that some of the cryptocurrency is not even for the benefit of the people, because fundamentally you can imagine that people are standing by the side of a digital pool where all these digital things are swimming together and interacting together, and they need to transact. They need a bank account. They need to exchange value. And we have one toe in. A lot of what we do is not even for us. It's for them. It's for things to do things with each other. And they have different requirements. And you need to have a way of representing value that can be transmitted, transacted, etc., identified in a digital way, in a programmable, verifiable, better, faster, cheaper way for that particular use case.
It's funny, these technologies come on the scene and it creates so much attention and excitement. But it's almost as though you know things are really happening once the attention moves elsewhere. And then the work really begins. So you take, for example, blockchain. You know, it's not such a hot topic of discussion as it had been. But I have to assume that companies are working very hard at constructing.
Oh, absolutely. There is a lot of effort into building the software stack, building the application base, ironing out the wrinkles. Some of the early use cases may not be very valid. Some of the use cases may be just mistaken, but that doesn't mean the trend is stopping. And there is net new technology that will be useful for net new use cases. And that's really what is promising. Now, one thing I want to say is that because digitization means data, we also have to look at the sources of data.
Yeah.
And historically, sources of digital data was organizations, companies, because they had the wherewithal to digitize with MIS and, you know, early examples of IT. And then that became systems, both physical systems as well as processes and business systems. But then some time ago, it became people. And now increasingly it's things. So every time the source of data shifts, it spawns massive industries. And the advent of smart, intelligent things, smart, intelligent infrastructure is what's so promising in the coming years and decades.
Everything has a sensor on it in one form or another. So everything is being captured. Another one of those hot topics that was very big a few years ago, and I haven't heard this phrase for a little while, that the data is the new oil. It's the most precious commodity in the world.
Right. The analogy with oil really works well in a lot of respects, and not in every respect.
Yeah.
But it does mean that you extract and explore for data, that once you get the crude data, it's just crude and not really useful. And increasingly, people are finding that raw data is a bit of a commodity. So you need to put it in a refinery and in a supply chain such that you can build data products out of that raw material. And that's all leading to the data economy. The companies that have figured out how to monetize data really don't seem to care much about anything else. And, you know, great example of that is the social media and search engine companies, where they make their money off of data. So therefore, they can afford to give away a lot of things for free.
That's the deal.
Welcome to a whole new kind of a business model. So now traditional businesses have to figure out, do we need to worry about this? Is this an opportunity? Is this a threat? And how do we deal with that? And you can't really make these decisions if you don't understand all these different trends in one decision body, as I like to say.
Right. To your point about oil, and then it goes through the stages of use and increasing value from just a commodity to how it's being used in economic and industrial terms. each step of the way, that needs to be paid for, which is the crypto part.
The transactional part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So since you shared this with me, this has always been a really nice framework or just a way to view how all these technologies are moving together at different stages of development.
Yes.
Toward our ever increasingly powerful and accelerating world. And really underlying it on the compute end of it is where we are in HPC.
Right. So the other thing that's you can superimpose on this is that when you go from analog to digital, digital things are easier to move around. You can communicate relatively easily and almost for free. So that means you can go from fixed to mobile. And that has led to mobility of not just data, but also things. That's really interesting. It also eliminates distance. This is really the thesis behind going from geopolitics to technopolitics, is because geo is being eliminated by technology in some ways and reinforced in other ways. So it's just more complicated. So that allows you to think of things in a more holistic way in terms of what the future holds. And one recurring thread is higher integration, that as you eliminate the distance, you just bring things closer together, and that allows them to get integrated better. And that's the whole edge to cloud, as edge sort of becomes the new IoT to encapsulate all of that, or edge to core as a replacement for, as an evolution of mobile cloud. And that's really what's exciting, is that all new fresh ground and new possibilities that are going to help humanity, right? Now, everything can be used for good or bad, so one has to be diligent. Mm-hmm. The transition from where we are to where we want to go can be complicated, and it requires wise, prudent policies and plans. Mm-hmm. But the nirvana is like really intoxicating.
Yeah, yeah. And that's where cyber comes in.
That's right.
See, it keeps working, this whole framework. Geo is analog, and techno, of course, is digital. So,
right. Well said.
So there we have it. All right. Well, as always, really fun to talk with you, Shaheen, and I'll look forward to our next chat.
Likewise. Thank you.
That's it for this episode of the At HPC podcast. Every episode is featured on InsideHPC.com and posted on OrionX.net. Use the comment section or tweet us with any questions or to propose topics of discussion. If you like the show, rate and review it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. The At HPC podcast is a production of OrionX in association with Inside HPC. Thank you for listening.